Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, depending on where you are around the world, here on ACB Radio Mainstream's Main Menu Live program. My name is Jeff Bishop, and I'll be with you here for the next 2 hours, talking technology from a blindness perspective. This week, we have a number of guests. First, we're going to hear from Woody Anna Dresner from the National Braille Press. She took Jonathan Mosen's Google Audio tutorial that was released a while back and converted it to a book, now available from National Braille Press. We'll talk to her all about that, as well as other things that might be happening at National Braille Press. For example, I know that magic is currently working its way through National Braille Press. The Harry Potter book is currently in production. At least it better be, because I want mine. And we'll talk to her all about that. In the second half hour of Main Menu Live, in the first hour, we're going to hear from a very familiar voice here on ACB Radio, that of Steve Bauer. He's going to talk to us all about commercial radio from a blindness perspective, as well as answering any questions that you have about HD radio. He's had one for quite some time, and we featured a review all about HD radio right here on Main Menu. It's available in the on-demand archives. And then in the second hour, we bring on Shay Martin from Blind Adrenaline. They're just about ready to release a brand new software release called Rail Racer. It's a multiplayer or single-player racing game. I've had an opportunity to play it for quite some time, and I'll tell you, you're in for a treat. We'll talk to Shay Martin all about that, and he'll give us his history, tell us about the game, and a lot more. We'll dig into some of the things that it takes to actually develop an accessible game. That's what's coming tonight on ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. If you'd like to get a hold of us during the show, you can reach us by sending an instant message to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. In just a few minutes, we'll open up the phone lines where you can call in and ask any questions that you may have of Woody Anna Dresner from National Braille Press, and we'll do that for each of our guests tonight. Without further ado, let's warmly welcome our first guest, Woody Anna Dresner. Hello there. How's it going tonight?
Hi. Excuse me. Hi. Everything's going fine.
Oh, great. Now, you're in Hawaii.
Right.
And so it's got to be good in Hawaii, right?
Well, pretty good. We actually went through a dry spell for a while, but the rain has picked up in the last week or so, which can be annoying in terms of getting out, but it's also good because the fire warnings they had earlier in the month have been dropped. So.
Oh, that's good. Well, we could use the rain. So if you get sick and tired of the rain, you could wish for it to come over our way, because today it was 104 here in Tucson, and I have no idea what it is in Phoenix right now, but it's very, very hot and very, very dry here. So. All right. Well, the last time that we had you on Main Menu, you talked to us all about your blogging book. And I know a lot of people have gotten that, and I've heard from quite a number of them, and they've told me they've really enjoyed that. The last person I heard that had gotten it actually is one of the people who produces content for us each week, Jamie Pauls, and he really liked it. In fact, he's now using WordPress for his blog. So there you go.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah. And so tell us a little bit about the new book that you've written. I believe it's called Google It, right?
That's right, yeah. Well, originally, Jonathan Mosen put out a tutorial, an audio tutorial called Get Going with Google. And I thought it was excellent and really wanted people to have access to it. And I thought it was great. The only thing was that I know some people really like to have things written down, and then there are also deaf-blind people who I thought, you know, could really benefit from being able to use Google, but obviously needed a Braille format, and so I asked Jonathan what he thought about doing a Braille version, and he was in favor of it, and so that's basically what I did. It's not identical, obviously, because for one thing, Google changed in the interim, and some of the examples he put in the book that worked beautifully when he did it, you know, didn't because they changed and stuff, and also there's a certain amount of change that happens when you take something spoken and turn it into written work, but I wanted to keep the kind of informal flavor of the original, because he did a great job of putting stuff across, getting a lot of information out there, but in a very friendly way, and I wanted to keep that happening in the written book.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, especially with this book, because, you know, since it is a book all about Google, I mean, you're going to be getting your hands dirty a little bit and going onto the Google website, so it'd be great to have a Braille copy of the book sitting on your desk. And I remember from the Google tutorial that there were lots and lots of examples in there. So let's for those that may not have heard the Jonathan Mosen Google audio tutorial, let's take a step back and talk about what is included in the book. What kind of topics are covered?
It focuses on the search aspect of Google. We did not do Gmail or Blogger or that kind of thing. We focused basically on how to conduct a search and how to get the precise kind of search that you might want. There's, of course, an introduction about what Google is, and then there's all sorts of different operators that you can use to narrow your searches in different ways or shape them in different ways, in some cases broaden them. There's like the synonym operator, for instance, where you can tell it to look for words that mean similar things, and then some things people might not be aware of, like how to search for tracking numbers for packages or how to use Google to convert currency or metrics to British units or things like that, and a little bit of a look at some of the other services that are available, like the translation service and Google News and that sort of thing, just to get to really focus on the search and then let people know what some of the other options are.
Okay. Now, I don't know if these things were covered because I haven't had an opportunity as of yet to get my hands on the book. I haven't purchased it yet. But was Google Alerts or any of the personalization features covered? Because I know that actually wasn't really a prominent feature of Google at the time that the audio tutorial was released, but I wasn't sure if you had, you know, delved into those specific areas or not.
Well, we have a chapter on customizing Google, setting your preferences. So that you can, say, set it up so that you'll see 100 search results per page instead of 10 and that sort of thing. And in the Google News section, we did talk a little bit about how you could create Google Alerts that would send you email about events or else create an RSS feed for you of a search so that you could add it to your reader. There was a brief section on using like text messaging, although that was very brief, but at least, you know, something. Some basic customizing, but we didn't really get into the whole Google Accounts kinds of stuff. The other thing I did was try to give in the table of contents each chapter, I tried to at least put some kind of mnemonic to kind of help, like when we're talking about the search where you exclude terms, I actually put a minus sign up there in the contents as a kind of a quick reminder. Some of them are harder to do that. I think the ones that are the most annoying are the Google searches where you have the ones that involve a colon, like the site search or the date search, where you need to put a colon in, and in some of them you put a space after it, and some of them you don't. And I couldn't think of a really cute way of putting that in the contents. But at least in general, to try to give people, you know, some kind of a quick way, so once they've read it, hopefully they can kind of look down the table of contents and, oh, yeah, that's the one where you use a tilde, you know, or something to kind of make it quick to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, wow, there's all kinds of different operators, and they seem to be adding so many new services to Google that I would think a book like this, to try to keep it current, would be almost impossible.
We can't, which I think is one reason we did kind of stick to the basic search stuff. because at least, I mean, and even that changes. I was kind of annoyed to discover a few weeks ago that when I tried to do a date search, that no longer seemed to work. Even though, you know, it worked fine in March. and, you know, and they do keep adding things. I think that the fundamentals of what we did, I think, will continue to work. But obviously, there's a big disclaimer. And on my NBP updates blog, I can't possibly follow everything that happens at Google. But at least if I hear something really interesting and big that seems relevant, I'll try to stick it up there. But it's not going to be. There's no way it can be a really that I can follow every development because they're always doing something and it changes very quickly. And but at least maybe we'll put up some things here and there if they seem particular. If I hear about them and they seem particularly noteworthy.
Yeah, now that brings up a good point. I was going to actually talk about your blog, and, you know, because that really is a vehicle where once the book is released, you know, once things come out from Google that are pretty significant. For example, now they have headings on the search pages.
Yeah, and that is in the book. That happened, thank goodness, it happened. It was a little frustrating because I had to rewrite, you know, a bunch of stuff, but it did happen, thank goodness, before I was done. So I was able to put that in, and it's a wonderful improvement, being able to use the headings to move between your search results and to move from the sponsored links, you know, to skip through those to move to your first search result. You know, it's a wonderful navigation improvement, and I'm very glad it happened soon enough to include.
Yeah, I just wish that they would continue to do that across all of the search things, like blog search and, you know, Google News and all of that, because there's a lot of places on Google right now where the headings are not there and they resort back to the standard look. Even the accessible search page. Now, did you cover the accessible search, the Google Lab accessible search product in the book?
I included a link to it, but I haven't personally seen a lot of need for it, and so I didn't really spend a lot of time on it, but there is a link there so that, you know, people can check it out and see if it's useful.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your opinion about that. What do you think of this whole separate page? Now, I sort of understand why it's a separate page right now is because it's they're testing it. But I wanted to get your opinion about that. What do you think about accessible search? Do you think that should be something that is separate or inclusive in the standardized Google search experience?
Well, it sounds like they're trying to search out pages that are particularly accessible in the search results. I mean, I understand that that's the theory of what they're doing with it, and I can kind of see that being a separate, separate thing, because not everybody would be looking for that. Plus, I mean, there are a lot of searches that you wouldn't use that for. I mean, if you were looking for pictures of something or other, the sites that you got might be extremely graphical and maybe wouldn't be considered accessible by their algorithm. I don't really know how they determine that, but I can certainly see plenty of cases where you wouldn't want that or where that wouldn't be your prime thing that you were looking for. So it seems to me it makes sense to have it as a separate operator. Eventually it would be nice if it wasn't a separate page, but just something where you could put, access colon or some kind of operator and just have it be part of the main search if you wanted it, or maybe have it as an option on your preferences page, along with safe search and some of the other filters that you can put on. I would think, handle it through the standard interface, but have it as a separate entity, kind of.
Right. Well, TV Ramen was the person who was responsible for doing a lot of that research and getting that done, and I expect that over time, as they see the usefulness of it, who knows, but I'm hoping that you're right, that they actually move that technology into the core product.
One thing about that, it could be a really, all you have, if you rebrand that as mobile search, because most of the pages that are really accessible are also pages that work really well on mobile devices. It seems like that's been a great boon on a lot of sites, that when as they try to come up with versions that are that work with the mobile stuff, then they also tend to be accessible. And so it's nice when, you know, when our interests can be the same as some other, you know, some other larger group.
Oh, absolutely. Now, speaking of mobile, does Google have, I guess from what you're saying, they don't. I haven't really researched it. Do they have a mobile, you know, mobile.google.com or anything like that? Do you know that?
Well, they have. They do have services specifically for cell phones and like the ability to send text messages and that sort of thing. I don't know. I don't have a cell. Well, I have a cell phone, but it's a really basic. I just use it to make phone calls. Gasp. I know when I bring it up on like the PacMate, it's pretty much the same page. It doesn't like default to some other setting. But I know they do have. Well, no, maybe it does for some of the search results stuff. I haven't used it that much on the PacMate, actually. But yeah. I mean, I know they have some mobile services. I don't really know how that ties in. I don't think it's related to the accessibility search at this point, but it seems like it could be.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I know that sites like Bloglines, they have a mobile page.
Yeah.
You know, and sites like that, and that's really nice, actually. I mean, I like them. So.
And WordPress has one where it's really easy using their mobile page. It's really easy to write a post. I mean, you need the full page to do more sophisticated stuff, but you know, I think even if you're using a PC, that the you know, that mobile page is kind of an easier way to do the initial write of your post, because there's just a few links on it and it's very straightforward.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and open up the phone lines and find out if anyone out there has any questions. We have one already. It's actually not related to the Google book. We sort of mentioned Harry Potter, and I think that sort of spiked an interest from a listener. Let me first give out the number. The number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if any of you have any questions for Woody Anna Dresner from the National Braille Press. A listener would like to know, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but they would like to know if the portabook version of the Harry Potter book, which is coming out next month, is going to be available at the same time as the, you know, bound copy or the Braille copy. Do you know if that's going to be available on the website?
Yes, it is. It's going to be. You can sign up right now to have it emailed to you on the day of publication.
Ooh, wow. Okay, so you're actually going to have it available the day of.
The day of. They're supposed to be releasing the files, you know, within enough time. I assume it's going to be breakneck pace. I mean, they're probably only going to get a week or two, but they're going to, you know, they are going to have it in time that the email, you know, the electronic version is supposed to be emailed out on the day, and the first printed ones will be sent out then. Now, they'll be sent out free matter, of course, so it could take a while if you're waiting for the hard copy. But if you want the electronic version, it will be available on that day. I don't remember the exact time. I know it's kind of, oh yeah, it's like, I remember because I figured out, it's like 1 in the afternoon or something, because they have to make sure that it is the day in all time zones. Because of the whole copyright thing.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be emailed out on the day.
Wow. So are you going to be one of the lucky proofreaders?
No, that's all done there.
Oh,
but I'm all signed up to get it, though.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's great. I can't wait. And I have yet to sign up, but I will be doing that. And for people, well, first let's talk about the price of your book. And is it the same in portabook versus, you know, printed Braille for your book?
Yeah, both of them are $12.
Okay. And how can people find that on the website?
Easiest thing to do is to go to www.nbp.org or www.braille.com, and then just do a search for Google it. There's a search box right on the main page, and then it'll pop up as one of the search as the search results.
Yeah, you can just search for the word Google, and that finds it too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you know, we do have the download option as well as the disc and hard copy Braille, so you can pick, you know, whichever format you like, and if you want to download it, you know, you can get it right then and there. So
okay, and if someone wants both then do they have to buy both, or can they get the printed copy as well, you know, as the porta book version, or do they have to buy both copies?
They're both. They're considered separate purchases.
Separate books. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And just so that we are complete for Ken here, do you know what the price of the Harry Potter book is?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I know it's on a really good discount.
I think it's $17.95, but
okay.
I think.
Yeah, that sounds
right. Really close.
I mean, it's basically the same price as the print book is going for on Amazon now, you know, until, and then it'll jump up to full price on the day that the book comes out, so.
Right, okay.
Good idea to order them.
Yeah.
Before that.
Right, okay. Well, now let's talk a little bit about things that you might have learned about Google since the book has been released. There's been a number of advancements at Google, and I didn't know if you wanted to talk about those tonight or not.
Well, one that I've heard about is the phone. They're kind of getting into the phone business with a 411 service where you can call. I think it's like 411 GOOG. I think it is. I've got that on
411 Goog.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've got it on my. I figured it out for the blog what the numbers are, but I don't remember now. But it, yeah, it's kind of cute. You you know, you speak the name of your business that you're, it's a business only, not personal listings. But you know, you speak the name of the business, and it tells you the number and offers to connect you and the whole bit. It's kind of cute.
Yeah, I've had different results with it, and it seems to know where you're calling from, and even to the area of town as well. Because I've tried testing it at work and at home, and the results have been rather interesting. I called and asked for a pizza place, and I got. When I was at work at the university, I got pizza places that were directly around the university, which was kind of neat. And then when I got home, I called it. And now I don't know if this is really, I don't know if it's intended to do this or not, but it just seemed coincidence that it gave you information that was geographically, you know, right around your area. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Did you find that to be the case?
Well, I tried it once. And I just kind of followed their prompts, and I was asking for a specific restaurant to see if it would, you know, how good it would be at understanding that. So it found it, but I didn't really try a more generic search.
Okay. Sometimes you can even specify the street name, and I've had both good and bad success with that, and it will sometimes give you the actual location. For example, if you want to get a Pizza Hut location, you could, you know, say Pizza Hut on Valencia, for example, and it narrowed it down, but that always didn't work. I tried it with different streets like Oracle and things like that, and it couldn't get that. So it's definitely a beta thing, which most things tend to be beta at Google. I think even Gmail is still in beta.
Wow.
Yeah. And so yeah, very very interesting. And then of course the CAPTCHA has been around for a while. And I know that with Google Alerts, they'd like you to sign up for those with a Google account. Did you cover that at all in the book in reference to the CAPTCHA stuff that's now available on Google?
It didn't really come up for what we were doing. I mean, like the Google Alerts stuff, you know, when I did Google News and did a search, it just seemed to be, you know, an option. And
right.
I didn't really.
I think you can sign up for the alerts with an account, or you can just type in an email address, and it doesn't. I think you'll accept it either way.
I just did it that way. I mean, I know their CAPTCHA has gotten a lot better over, you know, since last year when they didn't have anything in
the
audio.
Well, they keep improving it too. At CSUN this year, they had a whole presentation on CAPTCHA at Google. And they played all of the different CAPTCHA samples that they tried. And they said that when it first came out that only 50% of the people could understand the CAPTCHA. And it's actually pretty decent now. Have you heard it recently?
I haven't tried it recently, no. I'm glad, though, because, I mean, it wasn't bad before, but I'm glad they keep making it better. Because it's, I mean, I'm sure it's a hard line for them, you know, if they don't want to make it so obvious that some spammer can figure it out, that they want to make it. So at least you can. It is certainly frustrating when you get a CAPTCHA that you can't, you know, they go to the trouble to make it work with audio and then you can't understand it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. They have backwards they have people talking backwards in the background, and then they have a voice now that's extremely clear. So they've tested it enough that voice recognition systems aren't going to be able to pick it up and figure it out to bypass the whole spam thing. You know, so that's good.
That's really
good. All right. Well, how can we find out more about the blog that you've mentioned? I already know the address, but for those that do not, because I know that you post a lot of updates up there, not just on the Google Book, but you even posted updates on your blogging book, and you always seem to find these really interesting things that are hidden in the internet. So how can we locate that blog?
It's at NBP, as in National Braille Press, nbpupdates.wordpress.com.
Okay. All right, great. And what's next? What's coming next from you? Now, I know you released a Vista keyboard book.
Yeah, that was just a really basic little reference guide. You know, nothing fancy. I went to the Microsoft site. I grabbed the keyboard commands and arranged them in a way that seemed logical and put it out. So it's, you know.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's good because, I mean, with Vista now coming on brand new machines, it's going to be pretty important for people to have access to that.
Yeah, just something to get going with.
Let me ask you this. Are you doing an Office 2007 book?
Well, what we're going to do...
Oh, I hope you are.
Sharon Monte, who did WordWise 2000 and WordWise XP, is working on a WordWise 2007. First she's going to update the Word Quick and Easy, you know, the really basic getting started one, and then the other one. That's as far as we've gotten at the moment. But yeah, we should be doing that. That'll be great. She does a wonderful job. It's always fun to work with her.
Well, that one's going to be a big book because there are lots and lots and lots and lots of keyboard commands in that ribbon. So
you go through some of the basic functions of Word and how you do stuff. Now, you know, reference, we probably should do a reference card as well.
Yeah, like for the keyboard commands.
Yeah, like we did with Office. Oh, XP, I think it was we did. We went through and did all the just not tutorial step by step or anything, but just the commands.
Just
for
the
Word
commands,
and Excel,
right?
So. Yeah, we should do that.
Well, that one is really kind of important because even though a lot of the commands are the same, there are a lot of them that are significantly different, and the command structure is different. There's multiple keystrokes to do things, and things like that.
Yeah, the ribbon is really kind of it's a challenge, isn't it? Like, where is whatever it is? You know?
Yeah. Are you on Office 2007 yet?
I am. I haven't used it all that much yet, but I have used it a little bit, and so it'll be. I mean, I tend to write things on the PacMate, and then once I get a final, or, you know, get a decent draft, then put that into Word and really, you know, do the nitty-gritty of formatting. And so when I do that on the next book, then I'll get to find out all the fun for real.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I don't think Word is too bad. Outlook is significantly different. So if you spend a lot of time in Outlook on the PC, then you'll notice that it's going to be quite different, but... Okay. Any other books that might be coming out soon?
I'm working right now. I'm trying to finish up. It's going to be a buyer's guide and sort of getting started instructions for MP3 players and portable book reading.
Oh, great. Okay.
So it's going to have like the ZenStone and the iPods and Rockbox and the Olympus ES 3040/50, Icon. The book port,
right,
and a little bit about kind of what you can do with the note takers.
Well, I can get you in touch with two people that I know personally who know the Rockbox side of things extremely well. So if you need some help and resources in that area,
that'd be great.
Yeah, give me I'll shoot you an email with their contact information. And
great.
They're actually participants here on Main Menu.
They're
live.
What? I'm sorry.
They're participants here on Main Menu Live too. Don Barrett and Randy Knapp are both. Rockbox users and they love it. So,
it's pretty neat. I've had an iPod Nano for about a year and used Rockbox, you know, quite a lot.
Yeah.
It does some great stuff. It can be a little confusing. I don't think it's quite, you know, I wouldn't really recommend it for somebody who's just kind of really new to all of this. And
no, absolutely not.
Yeah, it's very intimidating in a way, having two different players in one. I think that could be really confusing.
Oh, absolutely.
And then sometimes they'll, you know, let's change the whole menu structure, and they do, and then suddenly nothing works for a couple of weeks. You know, you've got to be willing to beta test.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But if you are, it's great.
Oh, yeah. If you're pretty techie, then it's fantastic. So
it really is. It's wonderful software. I think one of the things I thought was really cool about it was when there was some bug happening, and I and some guy who had an iRiver were able, between the two of us, to pin down, you know, when it was happening so they could fix it.
Oh, good.
And, you know, I mean, that's truly cross-platform.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that was neat.
All right. Well, let's give them the information on how to get the Google It book from National Braille Press one more time, and then...
You want to go to the National Braille Press website, which is either www.braille.com or www.nbp.org. And then there's a search form right on that front page, and search for Google, and you'll be all set.
Okay, and it's $12, right?
Right.
Okay, and the Vista Keyboard Guide is how much?
I believe it's $5.
It is $5, yep. All right, well, great. Well, Woody Anna Dresner, we really want to thank you for coming on tonight. And let us know when your next book comes out. We'll definitely have you back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and good luck with everything, and we're looking forward to that Harry Potter book too.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon, huh?
Okay.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
There goes Woody Anna Dresner here on ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. And while we're getting our next guest here, I wanted to mention that Applian has come out with a brand new release of Replay AV is out, version 8.21. This release adds the YouSendIt plugin. And according to people on the blind replay list, this has been pretty accessible, although you do have to use your mouse keys a little bit to actually get into the YouSendIt plugin. But once that is configured, then you're able to pretty reliably actually get in there and actually configure it so that you can actually send files to people once they're recorded. It's a pretty nice feature. Well, while we're dialing up Steve here, I sure wish I had two more hands. While we're dialing up Steve here, we're going to go ahead and hear from Jamie Pauls from Access Watch, and then we should be right back with Steve to talk to us all about commercial radio, HD radio, and all things radio here on ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. We'll be back right after Jamie.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
There are many areas where blind people are no different than sighted people, and one of those is the need for a job. And it would be really nice if the site that you were using to search for the job was accessible. Well, apparently that is possible, thanks to a review submitted by Blake, who is an AccessWatch contributor. The site is indeed.com. Blake says that all of the fields are labeled nicely and that there are explanations on how to use the site. Blake submitted this review using JAWS 8.0. So go check it out, www.indeed.com. Come visit us at www.accesswatch.info and check out our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. You can always email me, Jamie Pauls, that's JamiePauls, @gmail.com with comments. Have a great summer.
There goes Jamie. Thanks again, Jamie. We really do appreciate you bringing that to us every week here for Main Menu Live. And now, as long as all of the technology is working correctly, we bring on to Main Menu Live Steve Bauer. Hello, Steve. How's it going?
Not bad, trying to do the true multitasking thing here this evening.
That's right. You're actually broadcasting over on the interactive side of the house right now,
right.
Aren't you?
It just so happened that I had planned to rebroadcast an interview I did with a smooth jazz guitarist named Steve Oliver that I ran on my Sunday jazz show on the radio station this past Sunday. I had planned to air that in this last half hour, and then when you guys wanted me to come on, I thought, woo, I can do two things at once.
Yeah, absolutely. We already have a caller, and I'm going to put them on hold here for just a minute, and we'll bring them on in just a minute. But Daryl and I spoke with you a little bit, and we wanted to have you come on. And first of all, we had planned on getting you on during the HD radio segment that you had, and which was fantastic, by the way. And I have a stereo in my bedroom, and I keep telling my wife that I want it to die, so that I have an excuse to go buy an HD radio stereo.
Well, yeah, there is an easy solution to that.
Well, there is, but I'm trying to do it, you know, the way that it doesn't look so obvious.
Well, okay, just don't put a lid on the orange juice glass. Oops!
Yeah, I've been there, done that. I remember when the cat dumped a 44-ounce cup of water into my laptop. And I know, yeah, liquids are not a good thing around electronics.
Not at all.
So how is that HD radio working out for you? Now that I know it's been a few months now since you've had it, are you still liking it?
I'm still liking it. I'm finding that a lot of the stations here in Wichita, Kansas, where I'm at, are a little slow to bring their HD services online. In fact, they're still just the same number that we had when I did the review. I have found that the AM is still really blows my mind that you can listen to an AM station that sounds so beautiful and stereo and as if it is an FM. That one still blows me away. And I'm just waiting for others to come on. Now, the FCC is trying to change the rules to allow AM stations to broadcast their HD 24/7. But that hasn't actually hit yet, because right now they have to turn it off at local sunset.
You know, why is that?
The fact is that when they broadcast on HD, there's a lot of garbage or noise off to each side of the actual AM signal. And so if you're listening on the AM band and you're not in HD, there's just a lot of crap around each side of the AM station. And at night, that's just going to multiply. And so if, for example, if you're listening to one of the big blowtorches, say WLS 890 out of Chicago, and there's people doing HD, you may never hear them again. So there's a lot of concern that this is going to trash the AM band, and only time will tell.
Interesting. So now, of course, when we broadcast that on Main Menu, it was in 64K, but you could still even tell the difference in the AM quality. It was amazing.
It's just shocking. It really is, because, you know, try. And actually, that's the best way to explain to somebody who doesn't understand what HD radio is to say, okay, now listen to this AM station, and even though it's a very broadband receiver in this unit, and which makes AM sound fairly good for AM, but then all of a sudden it switches into the HD mode, and it's just night and day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, as far as HD goes, now here, I'm going to throw water on your parade. I don't think it's going to last. I think it's going to die.
Do you really think
yes,
that?
I do not think it's going to last.
Why is that?
Well, there are several factors playing into that, one being the cost of the radios. Most people are not going to go out and spend anywhere from $100 to $300 for a radio, whether it's a tabletop radio or a unit for their car. So the price has got to come down to $50 or less for an HD radio, and it has to become a standard item in your car. Now, that's the first step. Now, the second step is these big corporations, you see, they all got together, which is amazing that they'd even talk to each other, but they all got together and decided, okay, for the first couple of years, we're going to run HD on our FM stations, but we're going to do them commercial-free. Now, the one thing they did that is nice is that they said, okay, and within each market, we're not going to compete. In other words, if there's a Clear Channel station broadcasting on their HD2 of Smooth Jazz, the Intercom group across town will not do an HD2 smooth jazz. They'll do blues or something else. So the idea is to get more formats on the air. But right now they're all just a big jukebox, just music. And very few stations are even doing liners or anything with it. And it gets real boring.
So there's no talk, there's no, you know, comedy or kids programming or anything like that?
Well, it just depends, I mean, on what format they're offering. But within each format, there's nothing, just the content. Just let it play. Nobody's doing anything with them. And I think what's going to happen is that unless the cost of the receivers really drops dramatically, and that's still a very unknown thing if it will, that the listeners aren't going to go to these stations. It's sort of like television. In February of 2009, the analog TV signals that we're so used to, channel 2 through 13, they're going to go away.
Oh, I'm not looking forward to that.
They're gone.
I'm really going to be upset about that. I have a Walkman that gets channels 2 through 13, and I love that, because, you know, you can be like...
You know, Jeff, I don't think the general public realize it. I don't think they still get it.
Yeah.
Because when those stations go dark, and my thought is, and they always say, well, you can buy these converters, and the government's going to let each household buy two converters, and they'll pay, you know, half the price of the converters. The converters will probably be $80 to $100 a piece. And then you put one of those on your regular analog TV, and it will work. But how many people are going to want to spend $80 per TV?
You might as well go buy a new TV, honestly.
Well, but can you afford the new TV?
Well, there you go. I don't know.
Because the cost is going to be more. I mean, I've got a TV sitting here, it's a little 13-inch color TV sitting here, and the thing cost me $79.
Yeah, I hear you.
Now, am I going to spend that much money?
Yeah, another $80.
To watch it?
Yeah, it's really really
even get the coupons from the government. It's going to be on a first-come, first-served basis. You sign up online to get them. Are they going to offer enough coupons? No.
Oh, I doubt it.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford it.
Wow.
So, I mean, the landfill is going to be filled with old TV sets, and the only people that are going to survive in this are people that continue to subscribe to cable TV, and for those cable TV systems that continue to offer the analog signals.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to the show. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Yeah, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
I got a question for you.
Okay.
With HD and these TV channels, you can get, you know, the lower end. Is there anything out there you can get the higher end, like for Fox, UHF? I got a Colby radio that can get the lower end, but nothing on the higher end. Does HD have anything?
Wow, I don't know. Steve, do you know if there's going to be portable radios that... And can you listen on the air, sir?
Yes.
Okay, great. Steve, do you know...
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
My other question, is there a place that you know where you can figure out how to set up RSS?
There is, I'll tell you what, drop us a note at mainmenu@acbradio.org, and we'll get you some resources on that, okay?
All right, thank you.
Okay, you bet. That's a great question, Steve. I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but...
I have not heard of any portable receivers yet that will pick up the HD signals. And I think here again, if when they come out, they're going to be so expensive that most people aren't going to want to spend the extra money.
Well, I don't even know if it's going to be physically even possible to put. I guess anything's possible, I suppose. But I'm just wondering, you know, if that's, you know, what kind of technology that are they going to have to put in, put in a portable. I mean, it's probably not going to work in a Walkman.
Well, it might, but remember, each TV station could potentially have up to 4 separate channels of programming.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Depending on the definition or, you know, that they want to use. You know, they've got so much bandwidth. And if they break it down as much as they can, they could have maybe 4 or 5 different channels that they're going to be broadcasting on their signal.
Oh, boy.
Of course, the more channels they broadcast, the less high definition they'll have because they're using up their bandwidth.
Well, yeah, because they only get so much spectrum, right?
Right.
Yeah. Very interesting. I don't know. I think this is a mess. They should have left the frequencies alone or at least allowed audio to be broadcast there. You know, because that would be a much smaller footprint than video in that area of the band.
Well, it's all money driven.
Yeah, you wonder who did that. I guess it's the people who are lobbying for those frequencies, huh?
Right. The businesses that want that spectrum for their communication functions, whatever they may be. And I just think the public is going to be really, really upset once this thing really hits. I don't think people understand what it's going to be.
No. Do you know the date of when that cutoff's going to happen?
Don't hold me to this because I'm from memory, but I want to say it's something along the line of February 17, 2009.
Okay, so it is not 2008 then?
No. They were supposed to happen this year in 06.
You mean 07, you mean?
It was 06. I'm getting my years mixed up. It was 06 it was supposed to happen.
Okay.
But then it got pushed back, and now we're at 09.
You think it will get pushed back again?
I would say no. I don't think so. Unless there is such an uproar from the public, and they go after, you know, the public goes after these jokers in Washington, and you know, go upside their head with a bunch of wet spaghetti and get their attention.
Not sure if that would work.
I doubt it.
Yeah, you probably need something a little stronger than wet spaghetti.
But, it's just one of those things. Yeah. It's all money-driven.
Absolutely. It's really kind of interesting. Well, I wanted to spend a little bit of time to talk about your commercial radio experience and to talk a little bit about, you know, how easy is it really for a blind person to get into radio now, especially with we have all this adaptive technology that's now available and all of that. However, do you know how accessible the systems are that are used in radio stations?
Well, this is a double-edged sword. Yes, accessibility is making it possible, and a lot of the systems that I've heard about are fairly accessible. Nothing's pretty and nothing's easy. But the biggest problem is, with all of the corporations banding together the way they are and buying all the large stations, the number of stations is so high for each big company that even for anybody, even for a sighted person, getting into radio now is much, much, much harder than it used to be because everything is being consolidated. For example, there is a one of the Clear Channel stations here where I am. In a cost-cutting effort, they decided to voice track the midday slot. Now, voice tracking means the announcer records it, and it's put in, and you aren't supposed to know they're not there. Well, the person doing the voice tracking here in Wichita is actually in San Antonio, and so these big stations are all taking advantage of this talent, and so this gal in San Antonio, she may be live on a San Antonio station. But she's also voice tracking two or three or four, who knows how many stations. And maybe she voice tracks two stations while she's live on the air in San Antonio, and then she voice tracks Afternoon Drive on two or three more stations.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up Afternoon Drive. I mean, that happens all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you get into your evening and overnight hours. A lot of that is voice tracked. It's never live. And so the opportunity to do that kind of work is even minimal because the stations do it as cheaply as they can, and you get somebody that can sit there. And you can take a four-hour show and in about 45 minutes voice track the entire thing, and you're gone. You're gone home, and you're still on the air talking about things. And, I mean, I was out at the radio station one day. Now, since I do my show from my home studio, I don't go to the radio station very often. But I was out there needing to talk to the program director one day, and he said, "Man, I got to get this stuff done." Not only was he live on the air here, but he was voice tracking a country station, I think in Missouri somewhere, and voice tracking a soft rock station in Nebraska, all while he was doing his show here. And I sat there and I thought, "Huh? How can he do it?"
Yeah, man, wouldn't you think he'd mix up the, you know, call letters and stuff of the station
and the weather and all that.
Oh, man.
I don't know how he did it.
Well, now, so you do your show that's broadcast on your commercial FM, you know, from your home then, huh? So you...
Right. Actually, because of all of the political things, because, see, I'm not employed by the radio station. I have a job during the week. I'm a contract person. So because I'm not employed by the radio station, they don't want me to put my speech software on their computer systems.
Yeah. I was going to ask that, actually, because I'm not even sure if you were an employee, if they would even let you put, you know, something like JAWS or Window Eyes on a computer that is broadcasting all the music and everything, all the carts and everything.
What if
it crashed?
No. It crashes anyway. But, you know, so what I do, and it's really, it's kind of interesting. I record the program ahead of time. And then I send the CDs out to the station, and then they put them into the system. But the cool thing is I have an engineer out there who's running a couple of the stations, monitoring them and taking care of things. So when I announce I'm giving away a CD or whatever, I take the call here in my studio, I record it, I quickly edit the material together, drop the current weather forecast in, the current conditions, and then I take that MP3 file and I email it to my engineer. He puts it into the system.
Wow.
And within minutes after I've given away that CD or talked to a caller about something, it's on the air.
That's great. So now what do you have in your studio? I know you use... What do you use to record with?
Well, I use a variety of things. I use Studio Recorder from APH, which is a lifesaver. And then I also run the Ops DJ program for all of my music mixing and creating the main content.
Okay, so you're running that to actually produce the show.
Right.
Okay.
And then I also... Just because you never know what's going to happen, when I'm recording my phone calls, I record them both in the OTS program and in Studio Recorder.
Oh,
so I've
okay.
got two file recordings going at the same time.
Oh, good. And they don't interfere with each other or
no.
anything like that. Okay, good.
And so then I quickly edit everything together, drop a music bed under it, and you know, do the audio processing, get it timed out, and shoot the MP3 file to the engineer. And I tell him in there which break I need it in. And he drops it in and notifies me by email when it's going to run, because some of those breaks include extra giveaways.
Okay.
So I've got to be ready to take phone calls.
Interesting. Now, I was listening to a Clear Channel station, and they were talking about the software that they use, and it apparently is all graphical with buttons. They just have to go up and click for the different carts and stuff like that. Do you know at all, you probably don't if they haven't let you load any sort of screen reader on their machines, do you know if these applications are accessible?
Well, if that software is anything like their web pages, forget it.
Oh, boy, man. You know, it might be interesting one day if they'd let you come in there and just try it just to see what it would be like. You know, if they had a machine where, you know, they could take the risk and put a screen reader on it.
Well, I think that software would be accessible to me via one of the production rooms, so I would be able, especially one of the stations that was voice tracked, where I could get on and just look around and not really do anything.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting to find out. It would be interesting for you to do that and actually come back and report about it. I don't think we've ever had any information out here on Main Menu, and I'm not sure there's a lot of information, you know, on that. And I would suspect that software that's used, you know, for example, at a Clear Channel station is probably used across the country, wouldn't you?
Oh, I would think it would be, too.
Yeah, so...
Well, you know what? I hate to do this to you, but you're going to listen to me say goodbye to everybody on the other channel here.
All right, well, actually, we'll go ahead and let you go then.
And, okay.
Enjoy your show, and again, thank you very much, Steve, for coming on tonight.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much.
All right.
I'm going to flip over to the other stream and into that program and say goodbye to you at the same time.
All right, good luck.
Thanks.
All right.
There goes Steve. He's headed off to Interactive. He does his three-hour jazz show over there at interactive.acbradio.org. And great show. I really enjoy that show. Get an opportunity to listen to that quite frequently at the office. So, great show. Next, we're going to hear from Shay Martin from blindadrenaline.com. He's going to talk to us all about his new Rail Racer game. And while we're getting ready for him, we're going to play for you a promo here, and then we're actually going to let you listen to a demo all about Rail Racer, and then we'll bring Shay Martin on to talk to us all about gaming. We'll open up the phone lines in 20 minutes or so, 20, 25 minutes or so, where you can call in and ask Shay any questions that you may have all about the new Rail Racer game. That's what's coming up in the next hour here on ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. We'll be back.
It is my fervent belief that blind persons, regardless of race, creed, color, or party affiliation, should have the same information concerning United States currency as their sighted brethren.
Now, if you think this is a great idea, thanks to the American Council of the Blind, there is something you can do.
You'll find a screen reader-friendly site and an online petition waiting for you at www.moneyforall.info.
That's www.money4all.info.
Come be a part of history with the American Council of the Blind. www.moneyforall.info.
Blind Adrenaline Simulations. Games by one of us, for all of us.
Hi, my name is Shay Martin, and I'm the developer of Rail Racer. When I began outlining Rail Racer 2 years ago, I wanted to create something new and different that didn't exist in the current crop of accessible games. Rail Racer is indeed a racing game. However, my goal was to create a gaming experience that was both fun and challenging, but most of all, something that was unique. Something that had never been tried before. Was I successful? You be the judge.
Welcome to Rail Racer. Set difficulty level. Rail Racer Pro. Choose type of race. Tag race. Race 10 laps. Game options. Control options. Voice options. Change distance reporting mode. Turn on posting. Enter garage. Adjust gear ratios. Fix damage. Enter the shop. Buy 5 nitros.
Install additional nitro port $25,000. Install supercharger $50,000. Install gravity pillar $50,000. Install 6-speed transmission $100,000. Install extra fuel tank $100,000.
Enter multiplayer mode. Enter chat lounge. Join existing game. Create new game. Start new race. Prepare to race.
More about Rail Racer, please go to blindadrenaline.com. Games by one of us, for all of us.
Since accessible games have been around for quite some time now, I was intrigued by this brand new game from blindadrenaline.com. My first impressions were, wow, is this something I'm really going to have to get used to? This is Shay Martin's first release, and I would say that it took about 2 years to develop, and it's simply amazing. Let's warmly welcome Shay Martin from Blind Adrenaline to Main Menu Live. Hello, Shay, how's it going?
Hey, Jeff. Hello, all you Main Menu listeners out there.
Yeah, welcome aboard. And I'll tell you, for someone who's never driven a race car, the learning curve
little pun on words there in reference to the curves, but is a bit steep. but it's an amazing game, and we'll get into all those details. But I really wanted to kind of start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your career, and then we'll get into the game. How's that sound?
Sounds good, man.
Okay, great. So now I listened to the National Public Radio spot. And that was really great. You were actually on NPR, and people can actually go listen to that at blindadrenaline.com. And I learned quite a bit about you from listening to that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your career before Blind Adrenaline got started?
Sure. Well, I started off as a roofer, actually, in central Alabama, and got tired of that quickly, as you can imagine. So I started teaching myself computer graphics. This was well before I lost my sight. And started doing computer graphics and got a job in Birmingham, Alabama, doing 3D graphics, and then picked up compositing, which is where you take different elements and put them together for commercials and television and film. I just went from one job to the next until I ended up in Los Angeles working on television shows like The X-Files and did some movies. The Green
Mile,
The Grinch. Couple. I didn't do a lot of movies because just as I was getting started on that end of things, I started losing my sight to diabetic retinopathy. This was about 6 years ago.
So now, that's interesting. So was it? I would think it would be really difficult to get into that industry, you know, especially you know in Hollywood and doing movies and television. And was that really difficult to get into?
Yeah. Well, the first part of it was real tough, just getting your foot in the door. And then I was fortunate enough to be with a team in Atlanta. We won an Emmy for some work we did for the Learning Channel. And once I had that on the resume, that helped open up a lot of doors in Los Angeles. But, yeah, it was a trip, man. It was a fast, fun ride for a while.
Now, of course, you could drive then, right? And, you know, you were pretty much fully sighted at that time?
Yeah, and I wanted to be... you know, like an amateur racer as much as I could. I took some lessons out in California racing karts, K-A-R-T-S, which sounds like a bunch of go-karts, but these things go about 85 miles an hour.
Oh, wow,
yeah.
Okay.
When your rear end's 3 inches off the ground, that's plenty of speed.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's such an adrenaline rush to be racing, and I started doing these games. I wanted to, you know, do something that I wanted to play and something that would match up to the moniker of Blind Adrenaline.
Okay, so you probably drove both automatic and stick shift and you know that kind of thing when you were driving.
Right, yeah, preferring the 5-speed.
Okay. That's kind of important as we get into the game here. But okay, so then you as you mentioned on the National Public Radio segment, you lost your sight, and that was about 6 years ago, huh?
Right, yeah, the doctors had never seen another patient lose their sight any faster than that. It was about 5 months from the time the first symptoms showed up till I was completely blind. Of course, the surgeries added to that because of the pressure the eyes had to be under surgery, but it's pretty quick.
That is pretty quick. I mean, normally, you know, things don't happen, you know, that quickly with any kind of diabetic, you know, symptoms and stuff.
Yeah, but most of it was my fault because the work schedule I was doing, you know, it was not anything to do 110, 120-hour work weeks. It was just
oh, my
ridiculous.
Gosh. So, wow, okay.
Yeah, all you diabetics out there, take care of yourself.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm one of them, too, so, yeah, absolutely. And were you so you had that pretty much all your life then? So you knew, you this didn't sneak up on you like, you know, you weren't... You're not a type 2 then?
Right. I had it since I was 11. I'm 35
okay.
now.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine the shock if you didn't have it at all and then going into the doctor and going, what? What the heck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be kind of scary. Okay, so that's pretty amazing that from 6 years ago going blind to I would consider you now a professional you know game developer. That's pretty impressive.
I guess it depends on your definition of professional. We'll see.
Well, yeah, okay. So how did you get started with Blind Adrenaline?
I just wanted to take a stab at programming, see what I could do. And I just got to looking on Google, really, is where I started, just seeing what was out there, and I ran across the Visual Studio IDE by Microsoft with Visual Basic and Visual C. At the time, it was 2003, and I just started looking up tutorials and doing those, and then I got a hold of Justin Dobbenmeyer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he is a professional programmer for real.
Well, absolutely, yeah, he's the man. Although we haven't seen much coming from him lately.
Yeah, he's been really, really busy with his job, but he helped me. He tutored me a good while there, and that I probably wouldn't be able to do it if it wasn't for him. Or if I had been able to do it, I'm certain another year would have been tacked on to the learning curve. At least he's really good.
Yeah, he's really, really good. Yeah.
But talked with him for a while, and I made a couple little dumb shooter games, you know, and just as a warm up. And Rail Racer was originally just going to be a simple drag racing game, but you know, one idea led to another, and pretty soon.
Oh, it's crazy! There are tons of features in that. We'll cover all of them, or at least we'll try to within an hour, and give people a good flavor as to what's there. So now, did you write this in C or Visual Basic, or what language did you pick?
Visual Basic. I dig it. I know a lot of programmers prefer C, but looking at the two, the syntax was easier for me to learn. And since we're only dealing with audio here, no graphics, and not a lot of programming overhead, you really don't need that high level, you know, of language intricacy. It doesn't seem to me, anyway. Rail Racer is pretty complex as far as what it does with audio, and it runs fine. We've run it on 450 megahertz systems, and no sweat.
Well, and especially with .NET, and I see that .NET is required, and we'll get to requirements and all of that here tonight too. But you know, it really doesn't matter with the language runtime. You know what language you pick, because it all ends up the same place anyway.
Yeah, and like I say, it's running fine. I was really concerned with that at first, but it's done very good. I got to hand it to Microsoft for once. They've done a really good job with this.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, as you began to develop Rail Racer, did you look at what was already out there? For example, Top Speed 2 or Top Speed, you know, that's been around for, well, I'm not even sure how long that's been. Do you know?
I first ran across it about, 3 years ago, I guess?
Yeah, I know it's been around at least two, but I wasn't sure if it was around 3 years ago.
Yeah, and those guys did a fantastic job with that. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. That game playable on the Internet, and it's free. You know, it's just incredible. And I've talked with Davey, the programmer of that, and he's a really great guy.
Yeah, now, I played with that to try to get a sense of, and honestly, I hadn't really played with it prior to really starting to look at your game, and to try to compare the two. But I was wondering, how did you take a look at that and say, okay, I like the features of this game, or did you really start from scratch and go, okay, here's what I want?
Well, the concept of Rail Racer is a good bit different, because it's not your standard racing on the road kind of thing where you have to stay on the road left to right. I didn't want to have to deal with that. I think Top Speed does a good job of dealing with it, but it's not what I wanted. Therefore, we've got the rail where you're not concerned about staying left to right, you know, between two borders or anything. You're on a rail like a roller coaster, and the thing you're concerned about is your speed. You're leaning in the curves, jumps, force fields, and loops, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, which I'm not good at all, but that's fine.
Yeah, it definitely takes some practice, man. It really, really does. I mean, the beta testers were all just the first few times you play it. It's kind of frustrating because, especially taking the curves, and most especially if you're using the mouse, which I prefer, because it just, to me, it feels like you're really driving something instead of just hitting buttons.
Sure, sure, yeah. Well, we'll get to that, because I found that was really intriguing, and I tried doing it with the mouse first, and I got really frustrated, to be perfectly honest, because really that was really the first time that I've really used a mouse. And I'm not sure that there's any other games out there right now that are meant for this community that do use the mouse. Are there?
Yeah, Judgment Day is all mouse driven, or can be mouse driven, and it works really well that way.
Oh, okay. I haven't played that one yet either. Work's been keeping me, pretty busy doing.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been out. I think it came out Christmas. actually.
Yeah, I remember it coming out, and I know Kelly was all jazzed about it. And
yeah, you can get that one at L Works. Liam wrote that one.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the characteristics of the game. The game is obviously a racing game, and I never really put the name rail really together until you kind of mentioned it. I didn't really think about, you know, it being like a rail on a roller coaster. So that's kind of interesting. It makes sense as you play the game that you don't have to control left to right. So tell us, what is the basis of the game? What is the premise? How, you know, what is the intent of the game?
Well, there's a whole background you can read about on the website, but in a nutshell, it's set in the future when a comet comes in and explodes over the surface of the Earth, blinding 80% of the Western Hemisphere, resulting in the blind taking over. So, for entertainment, these future blind folks race on the rail. That's where it's set, anyway.
Okay. I remember reading that, but it's been a while since I read that, because I read that when you were first announcing that the beta was going to be coming out, you know, months ago. And
I think every video game needs a cheesy background.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, hey, it's not a game unless it has a cheesy background, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so how is the game organized, and you know, how does it work?
Well, you're sitting in a pod, a racing pod, and on a rail. You've got a engine that's pretty basic when you start. As you play the game and you earn more money in your career, you can upgrade your engine with supercharger, 6-speed transmission, that sort of thing. But let's say you start in the game and you're playing with a mouse. You would push the mouse forward to throw down your accelerator. The engine revs up, the game starts, and away you go. And just like a car, as the RPMs rise, you have to shift. So when your RPMs max out, again, if you're using the mouse, you would hit the right mouse button to shift up. And if your RPMs get drop as you slow down, you would use the left mouse button to shift down.
Okay, well, let's take a step back there for a second on the whole shifting thing, because some people that are listening tonight, I mean, we know what a gear shift is in a car and that type of thing, but honestly, most of us who, or at least a lot of us who are totally blind, or who, you know, didn't have enough vision to drive, don't really kind of get the whole concept of shifting and you know, in other words, you know, upshifting and downshifting. Can you kind of describe for us? Hey there, doggy. Can you kind of describe for us
what? I'm going to mute you while I'm talking here. Can you kind of describe for us what the whole shifting experience is like? In other words, you know, as you're playing the game, what should the user be doing with that shifting? Can you kind of describe that for us? Because I think that, at least for me, that was a pretty significant learning curve for me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, the way the engine works is it's got a realistic physics engine in it, and that means when you first start off, you're at a low RPM. That means your engine, your transmission, everything is rotating at a slow rate, and therefore your wheels are also. So as the engine builds up momentum, and as you build up more speed, everything's turning over faster and faster and faster. That's where RPM comes from, revolutions per minute. Well, those RPMs can only reach a certain amount before the engine is over-revved. In the case of rail racers, 10,000 RPMs without the supercharger and 12,000 RPMs with it. So in gear one, at 10,000 RPMs, for instance, you may only be able to go 70 miles an hour. Once you get to that speed, you need to shift up into gear two so that the engine speed is transferred to more wheel speed.
Now, I noticed, though, Shay, that when I did that the sound did not seem to go as fast.
That's right, yeah. Once you shift, the RPMs drop back down. Your speed is continuing to increase, but your RPMs drop because they're now feeding the wheels again, and they have to build up momentum once again.
Okay, so just because you've shifted up doesn't necessarily mean that you're going slower.
That's right. You gotta.
Okay, well, that's really kind of important to know, because from listening to the sound, it's sort of misleading. In fact, you think you're going slower.
There are tabs in the rail you can hear as you go. So as you race, there's sort of a tick, tick, tick sound.
Yes, right, okay.
So as you go faster, you'll hear tick, 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 tick.
Okay,
and that's an indicator. There's also a wind sound that plays. As you reach, once you reach about 140 miles an hour and up, you can hear the wind get stronger and stronger.
Well, I've yet to get that fast.
But it's really something you just need to get used to as you play it.
Okay, so you're in second gear now. And when do you know that you need to go, say, into third?
Once again, once your RPMs rev up to around 10 grand, you'll need to shift up into third gear. And the cycle will start over. You're building up momentum, you're building up speed.
Okay.
Inversely, if you were to slow down, say if you're taking the curve and you slow down a lot, and you're going too slow,
uh-huh.
and your RPMs are real slow, say 5 or 6,000 RPM,
okay.
you'd want to shift down so that you can build up more momentum.
Do you shift down more than one gear, or should you just have to shift down once? I mean, what's the, you know, for example, if someone's driving a real race car, do they go from, say, fourth to first?
It would all depend on how much you slow down. Generally, you're going to shift once and then check your speed and then shift again if you need to. But if you take, for instance, in a rail racer, if you have a 180-degree curve, you're going to slow down a good bit, and you may need to shift two or three times depending on what gear you were in when you entered the curve.
Okay, that makes sense. Sorry for the neophyte questions, but
no problem.
Yeah, these are kind of important because,
yeah.
You know, for someone who's never driven a car, I feel like I'm 16.
Yeah.
You know, hey Dad, take me out for a drive. You know, teach me how to drive the car. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in, and then we'll continue on about Rail Racer. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Good evening, it's Kelly Sapruger here.
I was waiting to find out when you would be calling in. Kelly, how's it going?
Very good.
All right, and how can we help you tonight?
Well, I just wanted to say hi to Shay and just let everyone know that if you haven't tried the demo version of Rail Racer yet, you are really in for a treat. I am actually one of the beta testers of the game, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, now, we've been talking about the whole shifting experience, Kelly, and now, have you ever driven a car?
No.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you had lost your sight, you know, later in life.
Oh,
no. Okay, yeah, me too. Okay, so perfect. So, did you have a problem getting used to, I mean, you know, well, now, you've played other racing games, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, so you were sort of used to the whole concept. I really hadn't mm-hmm. played racing games, and man, it's... Shay is not kidding when he said that this was going to be a challenging game. This isn't just like Troopenum where you can, you know, wear out your wrists and be in pain for the next 4 hours. So did you find the learning curve on this to be pretty steep for you and Kelly?
Actually, no. The only thing I'm really trying to figure out right now are the curves when you're going different curves because, you know, especially sometimes there's some really short ones like a 45-degree curve, and then there are others that are 140-something, and those are the long ones. And this just seems like your car is slowing way down, and of course I'm thinking, no, speed up!
Yes, exactly.
I want to get right past the curve and keep on going there.
Okay. Did you have any other questions, or can you listen on the air? We'll have Shay talk about the curves.
Well, I just wanted to mention another thing that I really like about the game, and I don't know if this has been covered yet, but you know, in a lot of games, you get a soundtrack with them, right? Well, in this one, you can actually use a custom soundtrack feature, which I think is a lot of fun. You basically load in Winamp, and then when you're playing the game, you press a key on the keyboard there.
F8, is that right, Kelly?
Yeah,
F5 through F8.
F5 to F8, mm-hmm. And the F8 keys, I think, to play. And you can basically listen to some, well, in my case, real techno music or something as I'm motoring down the roadway.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of fun.
I'm going to save that until I actually master this game a little bit, because I would think that would really distract me. But, yeah, that brings up a great point. Not only that, but you have a track editor. And all of the sound files are also included as WAV files. So if you want to change the sound of the car, I bet you could even do that, right, Shay?
Yeah, I left them open so people can change anything they want. Just please back up your files first.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, Kelly, anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, well, if you can listen on the air, we'll talk about curves next.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. All right, so that brings up a great point. But before I get to that, I want to talk about the controls of the game, because there's a number of options. And so, can you tell us a little bit about that, Shay? About how can one play the game? And you have some intriguing options here.
Yeah, well, there's the standard keyboard controls. Let me start by saying this is all assuming you're right-handed. If you're left-handed, everything swaps. But if you're right-handed, your left hand stays on the home keys, A, S, D, F. A will tell you your altitude, S, your speed, D, your lean angle, and F will tell you your fuel, with the G right next to it telling you your gear. I've kept everything right there so you can just reach without moving your hand around. And then on the top row, Q, W, E, R, and T give you different things also. And then your right hand, if you're using the keyboard for control, the I and K key will accelerate and decelerate respectively. The J and L keys will lean left and right in the curves, and then the U and O keys will be your shifting.
Okay.
Likewise, you can use a joystick and remap the buttons any way you want, and of course the mouse, which you mentioned. Also, I got an email from a guy a couple of weeks ago who wanted to know about one-handed play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he only had the use of one hand, so I just have finished putting in that feature, so you can read about that in the instructions, but it is possible now to play with just one hand.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Shay, about the joystick. Do you have force feedback capability in the game?
No, that's the one thing about Visual Basic that was a drawback, is it's busted for some reason, and as far as I know, as of 2 months ago, Microsoft still hasn't fixed it.
Oh, bummer.
Hopefully they will, and I'll release a patch for that.
Well, that'd be interesting. I wonder what that would be like. I've played some of the kids' games with feedback on the Wii, and that's a really interesting experience.
Yeah, way cool. With the steering wheel, Rail Racer takes on kind of a new dimension, and I really did want the force feedback in there, and I hope before the end of the year's out we'll have it.
Okay, great. Okay, and that leads us to the final one, which is probably the most intriguing to me, I think, and that being the mouse.
Yeah, it takes some practice, and I've included a little tutorial with the game to help with the mouse. And I think I'm going to do another one because it's something that, if you've never picked it up, it definitely takes some getting used to. For instance, in the curves, when you go to lean, let's say you're taking a 90-degree curve to the right, you'll start with your mouse in a centered position. As the curve starts and progresses, you move your mouse to the right until you get to the center of the curve, meaning you're leaning farther and farther to the right. And then as you come out of the curve, you move your mouse back to the left. So ideally, you'll start at 0 degrees, you'll lean 45 degrees to the right, and then you'll straighten back up as you exit the curve.
Okay, so you don't want to stay leaning.
That's right. You want to gradually go from zero to half of what the curve length is, back to zero. I know that sounds complicated, but trust me, you don't have to do any math. It's just, if it's 90-degree curve, you're going to have to lean half that far.
Okay, now do you have any auditory? I obviously know the answer to this, but do you have any auditory clues for the player to know how far they're leaning, or how does that work?
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Sometimes I miss the forest for the trees. I've been playing it so long.
Well, you're a developer. I understand.
Yeah.
I've been there.
the curve has a sound that goes up in pitch, and when that pitch maxes out, you know you're at the center of the curve and you need to start straightening back up. And again, it just takes a little practice, but it's a rewarding experience once you start getting it, because with all the tracks we've got, there's 15 tracks that come with the game, and then you can make your own. I think the game's going to have a lot of longevity.
Yeah, now there's other sounds, though, that you hear when these curves come up. And I really can't, I mean, I don't have something here to play that I could play through the board here to give you an example of, but it's sort of, do you kind of know what I mean
by
that?
Yeah,
okay.
As you approach a curve 2 seconds before you get there, you'll hear a tone, a boop-boop sound. That means there's a curve coming up, and depending on which side of your headphones or your speakers you hear it, that's telling you what side the curve's on. So get ready to lean that way. You can also turn on track help, which will tell you what side the curve is on and also exactly how far it is.
Okay, and how do you do that?
F4 on the keyboard.
F4, okay.
We'll turn that on or off.
Now, is that a speech notification then?
Yes, there's a, if you do a shift F4, that'll turn on the indicators, because I know some folks only have hearing in one ear, and it'll tell you which side it's on.
Okay, great. Okay. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Our office hours are from 8.
Oh, that's very strange. Okay, okay, so let's see here. Sorry about that, Shay.
No sweat.
Okay, now, all right, so we've talked about the curves now, and now once the tone comes in to play, and you get the boop-boop sound, what should be the next thing that you'd hear to know that the curve is happening? That
you'll
pitch,
hear your,
right?
You'll hear your wheels disengage from the track.
Okay.
And you'll hear a whoosh, like a hydraulic sound.
Okay.
Then you'll hear the curve pitch start. Start the curve,
okay.
Finish the curve, then you'll hear the wheels re-engage. You know you're back on the rail and out of the curve.
Okay.
There's also similar sounds for the jumps. You'll hear
right.
a da-dong sound. That means the jump's coming up. Then you'll hold down your space bar for the jump jets, and that will lift the racer up off the ground. And you either clear your hurdle or crash into it, whatever your preference. And then after that, just keep on going.
Okay. Okay. We're going to try this caller again. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live. Hello?
Thank you for calling Freedom.
Okay. I don't know why we're getting a Freedom recording there. It's very strange. Okay.
And also on the indicators, there's each obstacle that's coming up has its own sound, like the loops and the force fields.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have gotten to the force fields yet.
No, we haven't gotten to those, or the shields.
Right, yeah. Right. On the force fields, you have to be going less than 150 miles an hour, or you'll bounce off of it.
Okay.
Like a Star Trek-y kind of thing there.
Right. Okay. Okay, so getting back to the mouse, then, a little bit about these curves. I think this is probably going to be one of the most challenging pieces of the game. What do you have in the game? You mentioned the tutorial a little bit, but how can one, for example, one of the things that I found to be rather difficult was training the mouse in reference to the amount of movement that it would take to actually move, you know, through the curves.
Yeah, there's a mouse adjustment built into the options, and you can go in there and move your mouse and then check your angle with the D key without actually racing. With a little practice with that, you can tell, you know, if I move the mouse 2 inches this way, that's going to cause me to lean 40 degrees or whatever. One thing I would recommend is if you're going to use the mouse is to go into your control panel for your mouse and drop the sensitivity all the way down. By default, they come pretty sensitive.
Okay, where do you do that in the mouse applet of the control panel?
Yeah, and there's also a sensitivity control in RailRacer as well. And you can just play with that in there and see what you like.
Okay. Now we've talked about the mouse at the curves. What about the keyboard? How far does it lean into the curve with each press of the key, or is that a trade secret you can't tell us?
it's a little bit random because you can adjust a few things on your car, and depending on what your wing angle is set to, change how fast you lean over.
Oh, your wing angle.
And that's another thing about the curves I should have mentioned. You can adjust your wing angle up, and that helps you in the curves, especially at first when you're having trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring that wing angle all the way up, it'll help assist you through the curves, but it will drop your top speed. So as you get used to the curves, you should drop that wing angle back down.
Okay, so if someone has the demo, where do they go set that?
In the garage. Go in there, and then you'll hear gear ratios, and then go down one more, and you'll hear wing angle adjustments.
Okay, okay. Interesting. Okay, we have a caller, but the caller will need to turn off their speakers on their computer because we can hear them. So before we do that... Let's see. Hello, caller?
Yes, is that me?
It is you.
Oh, cool. All right. Hey, Shay. It's Jason Fair calling.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to tell people that RailRacer is an absolutely awesome game. I've been playing it, and It is very cool, and one of the things I really like about it actually is that it is challenging. I find a lot of audio games that come out are sort of, you know, you pay your $20 or $30 for them, and then you finish them in a week, and then that's it. So one of the things I really like is that it is challenging, and that I think it is going to have a lot of longevity. And that mouse control is tricky. I've been playing with it, and haven't quite got it yet, but I'm getting close.
Yeah,
now Jason's doing really well. Actually, we had a multiplayer race last night, and he was hanging right in there.
Yeah, I saw you in the chat there, but I went ahead and bowed out because I would have looked like an idiot on the track. So, so now Jason, how long have you played the game?
I played the demo. Starting when it came out last week, so Wednesday, I guess it was. So pretty much since then. So about a week. Well, guys, less than a week. Yeah, I guess it is less than a week. So yeah, I mean, it's been fun.
Yeah, and I went ahead and sold Jason the final beta a few days ago, so he's been playing the full version.
Yeah, cool. So now, Jason, did you play it with the keyboard some first, or did you jump right into the mouse, or what approach did you take?
I think so far. I mean, when I played it last night with you guys, I was using the mouse. I've had a little bit better results doing it with the keyboard, but that's just because I haven't had enough practice with the mouse yet. But like when I was messing around with the demo on another machine that I didn't have a mouse connected to, I did use the keyboard. So I think I get better results with that, but it just sort of depends on, you know, I just haven't had enough practice with it yet.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Well, great. Now, did you have any other questions for Shay tonight?
Don't think so. Is the full version? Are we on? Is it on schedule for when it was supposed to be out? Or are we looking at?
Yep, we're looking at tomorrow afternoon at this point.
Okay.
Very cool.
Got one last bug in the multiplayer code to squash tonight, and then we're good to go.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll give all the people all the details on pricing and availability and where to get it and all that stuff. So.
All right. Okay. Good to talk to you guys.
Well, thank you, Jason, and thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. Okay.
And that's an important thing I'd like to talk about, too, is the multiplayer.
Yes, we'll get, let's do that now, then.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it actually took longer to do the multiplayer aspect of the game than it did the entire rest of the game, mostly because of my ignorance about WinSock and how all that works, but it's just a very complicated and picky thing to get everybody coordinated. And caller ID's kicking in. It's still not perfect, but it's pretty fun. I mean, it's way more fun to me to play a human than the anytime. And some of these racers out there are pretty good. We do tournaments on there, and I think the last tournament we had, the winner. The difference between the first and second place was like 0.02 of a second or something.
Oh, man.
It was just crazy.
I'm going to need a month or two to get to that level, I think. Well, maybe not, but...
No, not at all.
Oh, I don't know. It's really... I mean, you know, something like Troopenum, you know, and other games like that, I mean, you pretty much know what to do. This one, you're right. This really is going to be a significant challenge. I do have a question about the multiplayer game from a technical perspective, but let's bring in our caller first. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hey, what's up, Shay?
Hey, man.
Who is this?
This is Corey.
Oh, hey, Corey, what's going on?
Not that much, just hanging out.
Okay. How can we help you tonight?
This game's truly incredible. Something we've never seen before. I think it's the first game for the blind that I know of with a dedicated server of its own for a multiplayer mode, and that's truly incredible.
Yeah, I wanted to make it as easy as possible for folks to play online, because I know it's a frustrating experience to have to, you know, find somebody's IP and put that in and hope they're there and hope the connection hangs and, you know, everything.
Right.
So this one's running through a dedicated server, like Corey said, so it's all built into the game. You go to the multiplayer menu, you've got two choices in there. You can either create a game or join an existing one, select a track, and you're in the chat room ready to go.
Away you go, okay.
The chat room alone is incredible. I can't say this for sure, but I don't know of any sighted game. I can't say this for sure because I don't want to say this for sure.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of sighted games that do this.
That have an actual chat room like that?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah, my kids play these games, and there's chat rooms in there, and they chat. In fact, they even do audio chat with these, you know, they'll be shooting up stuff, and they'll be going, "Hey, what'd you do that for?" You know, and they'll be talking to people over microphones and things. And,
yeah. I wanted to put Team Talk in it, but they're wanting to charge like $600 for a license. And
holy cow.
With all the voice chat sites and Skype and stuff out there that work fine while you play the game, I just didn't see the need for it.
Well, you just need to sell a couple hundred copies, and then you can afford to get it.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, Corey. All right, Corey, anything else?
No, I just wanted to mention this game's truly incredible, and give it a shot, and if you like it, buy it. Make sure you read. Really, you have to read. If you don't read, you're going to be like, what the heck is this? You're never going to understand it. You got
to
read.
Yeah, it's really important to read the documentation in this case. Okay, Corey, thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks, man.
No problem.
All right. Okay, so... now the multiplayer. Are you? What technology are you basing that on? Are you using the multiplayer SDK that's built into .NET, or how are you doing that?
No, I wanted to get away from the direct play stuff because they're dropping support for it, like with Vista and DirectX 10 and all.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay,
yeah. So I got a third party package called Socket Wrench that. Barry Jenkins from VIP Conduit recommended to me, and it works great.
He's the man.
He's definitely the man.
Yeah, he's pretty darn he's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. Now, what else is there as we're racing around the track? I know there's things to boost your speed and
yeah, to get the upgrades. Let me back up a little bit. The game in single player mode, you've got a career mode where you earn money for winning and you lose money for losing. And you can choose different difficulty levels. The harder the difficulty level and the harder the track, the more money you earn. And as you get to different levels of money, for instance, when you get to $50,000, you go up to Class 2. And that will open up some new tracks you haven't been able to race yet. Once you get to Class 3, you can purchase a supercharger. Class 4 is a gravity puller that will allow you to pull your racer back down to the track after a jump. Class 6... six-speed transmission, Class 8, extra fuel tank, and maybe more to come depending on how many people buy the thing.
Oh, that's interesting because I noticed that there were only a couple tracks, and I was kind of wondering why that was as I'm learning the game, and that explains it right there.
I didn't want people getting a hold of the really hard tracks to start with and freaking out.
Yeah.
Because there are some really hard tracks as you get on up in class. And,
yeah.
At first, you've just got like three tracks you could access and play.
Now, when you're doing the multiplayer game and you're racing other cars, because I didn't get a chance to do this yet, do you actually hear the multiple cars, or is it just your car?
You can hear two cars. You can hear the one in front of you and the one behind you. I didn't want to overwhelm the player with too much info.
Okay.
As you get closer to the car in front of you, it gets louder. You can hear them, like for instance, when they burn a nitro to accelerate. And you can also blow a horn at them, which is always funny.
Oh, I noticed that, yeah. I found that sound, actually, in the sounds folder. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you can also place bets against your opponents using your career money.
Okay, and that's done in the chat room.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay.
You just select a name, hit enter on it, choose the amount of the bet, and send it to them for their approval. They approve it. Whoever... You don't have to win the race, but you have to beat the person you raced against. If you beat them, you take the money.
Oh, good. Well, I'm at negative 4,000, so I won't be betting anybody very time soon.
Yeah, you need to choose an easier difficulty level and try an easy track.
On the easiest track. Well, that's what happens when you're up until midnight playing the game.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I tried Talladega first. That's about the easiest one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the curves are what's getting me. Is I'm not getting fast enough through these curves, and that's what's slowing me down. So
yeah.
But I'll get there, and so now, let's see, is there anything else that you want to cover about the game in reference to the features of the game? And because I did want to talk a little bit about the whole development process and how that went.
Yeah, as far as the features, I just, from playing other audio games and stuff, I just want to put whatever I thought the user would want in there. So you can choose the sappy voice you use. You can set the volume of it. You can change your engine volume in the game. All the control options are there. You can change the distance reporting from time to distance, that sort of thing. And the beta testers have been great. I've got a lot of suggestions from them that they've gone into the game. And this isn't the end tomorrow when we release it. I'm going to continue to release tracks, of course, and we're going to have tournament mode. And there's also going to be a web page where people can upload their homemade tracks.
Oh, cool.
And let other people try them out. Now, when you make your own track, you can't race it for money, and you can't race it online. But if it's good enough, I'll have people send it to me, and I'll make it an official track and upload it. And then you will be able to race it online, and you will be able to make money racing it.
Now, how are these tracks? I mean, what do you basically do? You can place, what, curves and loops and jumps and that kind of thing throughout the tracks? Or what's the process in creating a track?
Well, every track is made up of multiple sections, and each section can have, loops, curves, jumps, force fields in it. And by combining those things, you can make some pretty creative courses out of it. For instance, there's a track later on called Hanging Force, where there's a loop with a force field in it at the top of the loop, but there's also a jump right there too. So you have to worry about the jump and the force field and getting through the loop all at once.
You're going to kill somebody.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though.
I guess that's the objective, huh?
Yep, exactly.
Oh, man. We have let's see. I'm not sure why we're getting these coming through. Let's leave that there for a second. Okay, so there's, what, a separate interface to build these tracks?
Yeah, there's a whole other program called the Track Editor. And once the sections get laid out, you can go back and put your items back in there.
Okay.
It's all text-based. You just tab between your fields. So, like, you'll have section one, and then you'll have a curve distance, and then you'll have curve length, that sort of thing.
Okay.
There's a tutorial for that as well.
Yes. Okay. Good. Okay. And now can people add sounds to those tracks, or are you limited to the sounds that are built into the game itself?
No, the only sound you can put in there is the sound of the crowd. Like you'd want to put the crowd sound, like where you have a jump or a loop or something.
Okay.
But I received a suggestion the other day that was a good one from Dark on the Gamers List about making atmospheric sounds for each track, which we may do in the future.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Okay. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention about the game, or I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the whole, how what the development process was like for that.
Sure. No, I think we've pretty much exhaustively covered it. One thing, if you get the demo, be sure that you update your DirectX to the latest version. There's a README file that comes with it, and just use that first DirectX link to update your DirectX. That's been the problem. We've had about 600 downloads so far. I've had 8 people that didn't work because of that, and a few others that didn't work because of language problems, like in France. But make sure you update your DirectX.
Okay. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live. Hello? Hello, caller? Okay. Okay. All right. So let's talk about we have about 10 minutes left here, and I wanted to spend at least a few minutes to talk about the development process, not from a programming perspective necessarily, because that could get really technical really quick and really kind of beyond the scope of the listeners here. But can you tell us what was that like? I mean, there's obviously the logic in programming of the game, but for example, the sounds and how did you go about? I noticed that a lot of the sounds, you say they're professionally created and things like that. Did you have to go out and record these, with microphones, or did you get some help from a studio, or did you buy, sound libraries, or how did that work?
I think I ran the gambit. The menu options, voice, and everything. I hired a professional radio talent for that, and I tried it myself, but it sounds like redneck racing instead, so I'd give up on that. I recorded some sounds, like the bloop for the jump, for instance, as a ball falling into water. You know, I bought some sounds from Sound Dogs, and I think I had a couple of music libraries or sound libraries here that I used. And then, of course, all the editing was done in SoundForge.
Okay, right. Okay, so all right. And what about the music? Did you produce that for the game?
It's a piece of Needle Drop. It's just a boring old, you know, techno thing for the menus. But you can change that as well. It's an MP3 file in the sounds folder.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just any MP3 file you want for your background music in the menus, you can put there. And like Kelly said, in the game you can play anything from Winamp that you want as well.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's try this again. We've had someone trying to get in here. Okay. Let's see here. There we are. Now, what about the development process? Did you find that? I mean, you obviously had developed some small games and things like that prior to. Did you find it, from an accessibility standpoint, you know, difficult in reference to getting resources, or how challenging did you find that to be in reference to the, you know, the programming environment and things like that?
Well, I used JAWS with Visual Basic 2003, and it's not too bad. Debugging, getting used to that, is pretty tough at first, and you have to be deadly organized, or you'll just get lost in it all. I would suggest any budding programmers out there start off very, very simple. Just get little bitty successes behind you so you can go on to the next step. It's definitely the way to go. I mean, I realize that this is my first release, but trust me, there's been a lot of little bitty steps along the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, okay, so where can we find out more information about the game, and how much is it going to cost, and that type of thing?
The game will be out tomorrow afternoon, and you can go to www.blindadrenaline.com. Adrenaline is A-D-R-E-N-A-D-R-E-N-A-L-I-N-E, A-L-I-N-E. I had trouble spelling it myself when I started. The game will be $33, unless you're buying it for a school, and I'll give group prices for that. It'll be $25 for three or less, and $20 for four or more for schools or any kind of educational facility.
Okay, so places like rehab centers, maybe, and stuff like
sure,
that?
Sure, anywhere they're offering education.
Okay, good. Wow, only $33.
Yeah, I had considered for a while charging for the dedicated server for the online racing, but I've got another game coming up pretty soon that will hopefully help defer some of the cost of that. The dedicated server is about $120 a month, so it's taking out a bite. But that other game should be out hopefully 2 or 3 months. It's not nearly as complicated as this one.
Do we dare ask what it is?
No, I'm working on a new interface, and I don't want to say yet until I make sure it's going to work right. But it's okay. It's not Rail Racer, but it's fun. And it will be online play exclusively. You'll have to play online for this one.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And down the line, we're working on a role-playing game. I think we're, as blind players, are well overdue having an online role-playing game in the vein of Warcraft. And,
okay. So. Well, that should be rather intriguing, huh?
Yeah, you can look for that one around 2020, somewhere in there, probably.
Oh, well, I don't know. I think you'll end up getting a lot faster because you can probably reuse a lot of code.
Yeah, that's true,
yeah.
Especially with the mouse and the sounds and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if people would like to email you or get more information, how can they do that?
All the information about Rail Racer, the basics and everything, even the instructions. You can also go on there and look at the money for the racers and the track times. Something I neglected to talk about was when you race a track, if you have web posting turned on,
mm-hmm.
your times will be posted to the web so you can beat your buddies and brag about it. But, yeah, you can go to the website, blindadrenaline.com, get that information, or feel free to email me at Shay, that's C-H-E, it's in Charlie Hotel Echo, @blindadrenaline.com.
Okay. And the demo that's available, there's a 29 meg, that will probably change, obviously, but there, right now it's about a 29 meg download, of which it looks like most of that's the WAV files.
Yeah, 90% of it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how is that limited? Can you tell us how is that limited?
It's significantly limited. It's just there to give you a flavor for the game. You're allowed to race two tracks. You can't play multiplayer. You can't post your times to the web. And the career modes reset every time you start the game. If you do play it, there's a bonus track built in there. And to get to that bonus track, you need to beat the game at the pro difficulty level, and that'll open up the second track for you. But it'll give you a pretty good overview of how the game's played.
Okay, great. That's great. Okay. And what about support? Is that going to be handled through email, or how's that going to work?
Yeah, everybody that buys the game, I'll be available to help them. We've got a forum on the website for a lot of questions, a frequently asked questions page, and I'll be available to help also. And we've got a bunch of beta testers that have been through it all and are really helpful and great.
Good. Is there? Are you going to set up a mailing list or anything like that where people can talk about the game on a mailing list or anything?
Yep, we do have a mailing list, and I'll be sending out that information to everyone that buys the game. And everybody that buys it is invited to join the mailing list.
Okay, so if you don't have the game or own the game, then you can't. It's not an open list, then.
Right, but the forums on Blind Adrenaline are open, so anybody can come in there.
Okay, so if people want to read about it or read people's experiences or kind of get testimonials or that kind of thing, they can go up there and get more information, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, well, this is really exciting. Tomorrow afternoon, huh? Now, you're on the East Coast?
Central time zone.
Central time. So, okay. So, everyone, go over to blindadrenaline.com, say after, what, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe?
I'm shooting for noon itself, but we'll see. That there will be an announcement on the front page of Blind Adrenaline. I'm just doing some last-minute testing of some things, and I want to make sure it's rock solid before we put it out. But
okay. All right. Now, and then for updates of the game, if you come out with a patch, will it auto-update, or will you have to download patches, or how will that work?
There will be one link for all updates. If you ever hit that link, you'll get the most recent update, and then that will just need to be put into your Rail Racer folder. And,
okay.
You'll be good to go.
Okay. All right. Well, Shay, we really want to thank you for coming on. And when the new game comes out here in the next 2 to 3, 4 months, you'll have to get in touch with us. We'll have you back, and you can talk to us all about that. And as you get Rail Racer updates and all that, we'll have you back. And
yeah, love to, man.
Yeah, this has been great. I really appreciate you coming on.
I really appreciate you guys having me. You all are doing a great job with the show, man.
Well, thank you very, very much. We appreciate that. And we'll be in touch. You'll see me on the Rail Racer multiplayer pages, or at least trying, and you'll kick my butt, but that's fine.
Not for long.
All right, Shay. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon, huh?
You too, bud.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go. There goes Shay, and wow, what a game. It's really intriguing. I got it last night, the full version of the game last night, got an opportunity to play it for quite a while, and it's, at least for me, it's quite a substantial learning curve, but I think once I get used to it, it's gonna be a heck of a game. That whole shifting thing, I think, is really what's kind of screwing me up in the whole game, but I'm working on it, and the curves. I think that those are the two big gotchas. It'll be interesting to hear from others what they find to be challenging or maybe even easy about the game. And you can chat about that on the Main Menu Friends list. You can send an email to main-menu-subscribe@googlegroups.com. We have well over 150 users there or listeners, and you can post your comments and suggestions and all of that there. It's an open email list that's available for all Main Menu listeners. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast feeds, they're available too. You can subscribe to them at www.acbradio.org/podcasts/mainmenulive or www.acbradio.org/podcasts/mainmenu. If you'd like to get a hold of the Main Menu production team, you can email us at mainmenu@acbradio.org. We would definitely love to hear from you. And next week, we're going to be hearing from TNT Consultancy. They have two exciting new scripting things that are coming out. They'll be announcing these at Site Village. And Brian Hargen is going to be coming on to Main Menu next week to tell you all about some exciting new improvements coming in Office 2007 for those of you using JAWS for Windows. So stay tuned for that next week, and we'll have a lot more as well on next week's show. I want to thank all of you for listening tonight, and we'll see you all next week on the next edition of ACB Radio's Main Menu and Main Menu Live. Good night, everybody.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.